Also, so welcome to the next talk. A little behind, like a minute, so I make it very short. The next speaker is named Pyro, and the talk is about the 90 cyber war, and he grew up in the middle of it.
I am that old, yes. There we are. Okay. So I am Pyro. Welcome to a brief history of the 90s crypto wars. Because we only have 20 minutes, this will be a very abridged conversation about the crypto wars. And I apologize, I'm probably going to be speaking pretty quickly because, as you can see from the agenda, there are a few things we're going to talk about. Some front matter, we're going to talk about PGP and Phil Zimmerman. We're going to talk about the Clipper chip and Skipjack. We're going to talk about Kalia, Kevin Mitnick, the Communications Decency Act, and Enhanced 911, as well as a wrap-up summary. So for those of you who don't know where you are or why you're here, the 90s were an interesting time with George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton in office. They were a time that seemed replete with parallels to today for various reasons that we'll talk about. Phil Zimmerman and the Communications Decency Act, you know, they have parallels to legislation around the world that is happening today. And we as a group and a society need to remember these lessons that were hard fought and hard learned at the time in order to keep our communications and our privacy with us today and going into the future. So a brief timeline about what we're talking about. In 91, Phil Zimmerman released PGP. In 93, the Department of Justice had a complaint and pursued prosecution of him for the same thing. And at the same time, the Clipper chip and Skipjack algorithm were released. Excuse me. In 1994, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, also known as CALEA, was put into law. In 95, Mitnick was arrested. And in 96, Enhanced 911 and the Communications Decency Act were passed and put into law into the United States. So who am I? I am Pyro. I'm from Dallas. I've been a participant in Dallas Hackers Association and DC214 besides DFW. I work in InfoSec. I've been a sysadmin. I've also been a paint sniffer. I enjoy dangerous hobbies, you know, things like riding motorcycles, doing professional pyrotechnics, scuba diving, and walking around Bahnhofsviertel at night. I'm generally grumpy because, well, I was a sysadmin. So take that as you will. For those of you who thought you weren't getting a EULA today, well, you are. I alone am responsible for the content of my talk. My employer wasn't a part of the conversation. And while I work in the telecom industry, I've never been involved with E911 or CALEA deployments. It's not a sales pitch. We're not talking about vendors, generally speaking. And because of Strafgesetzbuch 189, which states, whoever defiles the memory of deceased person incurs a penalty of imprisonment or a not to exceed 2 years or a fine. Yes, we will be talking about a couple of people in the middle of these conversations, and they will be safe at last. And this talk is entirely from the point of view of me, somebody who lived contemporaneously through it in America. So, couple of quotes. We cannot allow a situation where law enforcement's ability to tackle abhorrent criminal acts and protect victims is severely hampered. Sadly, at a time when we need to be taking more action, this company is still pursuing plans that place the good work and progress that have already been made in jeopardy. My view is this simply cannot be accepted. The other quote. While encryption technology can help Americans protect business secrets and the unauthorized release of personal information, it can also be used by terrorists, drug dealers, and other criminals. So, raise your hand if you think the quote on the left is contemporaneous to the time, was actually stated in the 90s. Okay? And those who think the quote on the right was made in the 90s, raise your hand. Okay? The majority are correct. So the quote on the left is referring to Facebook, and that was made by Preeti Patel in 2021. The quote on the right was made in a White House press release in 1993 when they were talking about the Clipper chip. Pretty good privacy. Great program at the time. Still pretty good. It was released in 91 as free and open source software. And it was meant to allow users to access good encryption, because encryption is hard. It was hard. And it was meant to bridge that divide a little bit and make it easier for folks. The stated goal of Phil Zimmerman was for victims of oppressive governments and those in need of privacy to have access to good encryption. So, you know, people who are informants, whistleblowers, people like that, people who are talking to reporters and reporters in dangerous areas. It was meant for those kinds of people. At the time, strong encryption was heavily regulated in the United States. It was treated as arms similar to military hardware. 128-bit encryption was restricted, 40-bit was allowed for export. Raise your hand if you use a 128-bit key for your SSH key. Okay. Most of us don't anymore. These restrictions on encryption, that was called the Arms Control Export Act, the AECA, for whatever reason. PGP was originally posted to Usenet at the time, and the source code was made accessible to those who wanted it. Shortly thereafter, it was published in a hardback book by MIT Press. Anybody remember DCSS? Parallels. We're going to see a lot of those. And it's really hard to enforce destination country restrictions when you have no control over who downloads something. When you post something to Usenet, you know, I can't just say, I'm sorry, you can't access that because you're not from here. And because of it, the United States Department of Justice investigated Phil Zimmerman until 96 for violations of the Arms Control Act. Spoiler warning, they ultimately declined prosecution of him. As I said, because people outside the U.S. were able to download it, he was thought to have been, or alleged to have been, distributing strong encryption to foreign nationals, which was a violation. The DOJ ultimately declined prosecution, and at the time, in their press release, stated they would not go into detail as to why. To my knowledge, they still haven't. In 1994, MIT had taken the source code, and they released PGP 2.62, which was amongst the community and amongst the more hardcore elements of our group, viewed as a compromised version. A lot of people thought that MIT had sold out, that they had hooked up with the NSA and they had backdoored it somehow. Those allegations were never proven out, but that taint had always been there, whether or not people started using it more and more. In 97, PGP was bought by Network Associates. If you love Network Associates, well, you love Network Associates. And in 2002, it was bought by Symantec, Broadcom, and these days it is an independent company again. Moving on, my second favorite topic today, the Clipper chip. So it was announced in 1993. There was a full court press by the United States government. They wanted everybody to have a Clipper chip in their house. They wanted everybody using this technology. The National Security Administration of the US, you know, the people listening to your phone calls, they designed this chipset in a bid to make public key cryptography more accessible. That quote at the beginning talking about, pardon me, the quote at the beginning that was talking about the encryption and the accessibility for businesses and people was because of this. They wanted everybody to adopt this. And why did they want it? Why did they want both business and consumers to adopt it? So they could backdoor your shit. It's the NSA. Why else would they want it? It used the classified skipjack algorithm for encryption. And really, when has a closed algorithm that you cannot see the source code for ever backfired for anyone in the world? It hasn't. I defy you to tell me that it has. And the way that it was backdoored was through the use of key escrow services. The United States government was keeping a copy of the private key for all of these skipjack devices in order to decrypt those communications when they need to, because, you know, terrorists and drug dealers and you and I. Obviously, there were lots of opinions about this, and the Clipper chip met with massive opposition from the tech community. There were barrels of ink printed about this. There were barrels of ink used to talk about just how bad an idea this was. Moving on, we have Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Agencies, also known as Lawful Intercept, for those who are in the community. It was supposed to allow for point-and-click wiretapping instead of having to go into a switch room and manually connect wires and things like that. You fax over a warrant to the telecom provider, the telecom provider looks at it, they tap a few keys on their keyboard, and boom, you have a wiretap, and that information is being transmitted to your agency or agencies. The fun thing about CALEA is that the United States government doesn't mandate how you implement CALEA, they implement that you do implement CALEA. So long as you have a method that meets their minimal requirements, you are in compliance with CALEA, shockingly enough. And it obligates telecoms and telecom equipment providers to design or modify their equipment, facilities, and services to ensure that they have the necessary surveillance capabilities as communications evolve. That is to say, because of things like voice over IP becoming more and more prevalent, because of the recent thing that happened with video conferencing becoming huge, CALEA comes into play with some of that, most of it. And ostensibly, if you believe the government when they tell you things, it protects out-of-scope information from being gathered when you have a CALEA intercept on your information. I will leave that as an exercise to the viewers on whether or not that's true. So moving on to people, let's talk about Kevin Mitnick a little bit. Regardless of how you feel about him and his recent passing, he had been on the run since 92, and at the time, rather hyperbolically, the Department of Justice claimed that he was arguably the most wanted computer hacker in the world at the time of his arrest. As you do when you have, tend to have a large stack of federal indictments coming at you, he pled guilty to some of the charges and got other ones dropped. He ended up spending 5 years in prison, 8 months of that was in solitary confinement, and 2 years on supervised release afterwards. Allegedly, he was not allowed to use a phone while he was in prison because prison officials were worried that he could start World War III by whistling into the handset. Hyperbolic much? E911. Arguably, it's not actually the worst thing that's happened. It came into law in 99. It was being talked about. It was starting to be worked on in 96. It mandated that 911 be the single emergency number in the United States. Phase one required that the carrier provide 911 with a phone number of the caller when they called 911. That hadn't been a mandate beforehand. Caller ID was still a pay service too at the time. Phase two required location data, that is latitude and longitude, to be transmitted to 911 at that time when it came into force. Generally, that was within 50 to 300 meters of accuracy, depending on the technology being used. And in 2019, it was updated to require further accuracy because, again, things evolve, technology changes. And arguably, my favorite part of this entire decade, the Communications Decency Act of 1996, because everybody loves decency now. Congress learned that the internet is for porn and decided to do something about it. That never goes wrong, truly. Persons who were engaged in indecent or patently offensive acts were subject to a $250,000 fine and or 2 years of prison time for doing something naughty on the internet. Obviously, this was challenged in the United States. That case was Reno versus the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU sued on the grounds that the CDA violated the First Amendment by abridging your speech. Spoilers, it did. The case went to the Supreme Court, who struck down the indecency proposals, provisions, excuse me, on their merit. I can only imagine the justices of the Supreme Court saying, let your porn be free. Section 230 was introduced as for safe harbor provisions for ISPs and telecoms providers. What Section 230 said was that if you are my ISP and I come onto your network and I say something naughty or do something naughty on the internet, I'm the one who gets charged. You are not also an accessory to that action of mine. Of late, some politicians have been very against this provision and want it struck down. Now, in the US, if you're a US citizen, you really need to be looking at the Children's Online Privacy and Protection Act. You also need to be looking at CIPA and similar legislation that's being pushed in our country. In the UK, for those of you who live there, you really need to be looking at the Online Safety or Harms Act, depending on how you call it. And for those of us who live in the rest of the world, not those two countries, there are know your customer style laws being proposed, being passed, and being put forth by our governments. We need to look at them. We need to find out what they are, and we need to oppose them, and we need to oppose them loudly. Thank you, everyone. This has been a very brief talk.
Thank you. Thank you. So we have a very brief moment of time, we have time for two questions, Max. So, any questions? Over there.
Thank you for your talk. If you could kindly say what was the toughest lesson we should learn from all that you presented, what would that be?
The toughest lesson that we should learn, I think, is honestly, forgetting that these things have happened. This talk came about because talking to others in our community, I brought up things like the clipper chip and just was met with dumbstruck stares. Like, what? What are you talking about? We have to remember these things happened because it's a cycle, and these terrible proposals from the 90s are coming back up, and they keep coming back up. Thank you.
And the second question, we have somebody in the back. Yeah.
Thanks for the entertaining talk. What's the most positive thing that happened in the 90s? So besides all the bad laws, do you also have something good that we could learn from them?
I would think the most positive thing was our community got a lot closer, a lot stronger. Things like CAMP, things like CCC, things like DEF CON all started. And we were able to communicate a lot more effectively and a lot easier at the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.